Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Ashley brings us this story.
When Clara Massons was giving birth to her son, a midwife climbed onto her bed and pushed down on her stomach. The woman was a specialist on childbirth. She explained to Massons that her actions would help deliver the baby. For the next several hours, the midwife and a doctor closely watched their patient. They took turns pressing down whenever Massons had a contraction, a movement of muscles when a woman is giving birth. The two were using an old, now debated method for troubled deliveries. It is known as the Christeller maneuver. The method was first described in an 1867 German school book. It is sometimes used during labor to help women give birth and avoid a cesarean section. Massons said her cries for them to stop were ignored at the Spanish hospital where her son was born 2 years ago. "I thought I was going to die," she said. "For 1 month after, my belly was blue and purple." Many doctors in developed countries say they have stopped using the Christeller maneuver. They say they avoid it because of the risk of broken bones, organ damage, and other painful health problems. The World Health Organization also does not suggest the Christeller maneuver to medical workers.
Europe has some of the world's lowest maternal and newborn death rates. Reports of mistreatment during childbirth are more common in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. But the Christeller maneuver and other questionable medical techniques remain common in some European countries. Depending on the act, these practices rise to the level of a human rights violation, said Mindy Roseman. She directs a justice and women's rights program at Yale Law School in Connecticut. Roseman said that not receiving permission from women for medical procedures and not taking steps to ease pain is troubling wherever that occurs. Last year, Croatian lawmaker Ivana Ninčević-Lesandrić brought attention to the issue of anesthesia. She told Parliament that she did not receive any anesthesia, a pain control drug, for an emergency procedure after her pregnancy ended too early. "I don't think I've ever been in much more painful situation in my life," Lesandrić said during her speech. In answer, the Speaker of Croatia's parliament criticized her for speaking for longer than her given time and for publicly sharing personal details. In the days after her speech, a childbirth advocacy group asked for and received hundreds of reports from Croatian women about poor medical care. United Nations human rights experts later said the stories showed a pattern of abuse and violence against women undertaking medical procedures.
Özge Tunçalp is a maternal and reproductive health expert with the WHO. the UN's health agency. She says the agency has noted increasing reports of mistreatment by women seeking health care in Europe. The WHO says a once common procedure, a surgical cut to make a woman's vagina larger during childbirth and prevent tearing, should not be used in more than about 10% of women. The WHO adds that consent should be required. Yet government reports show rates of the procedure go from 30% to more than 90% in countries including the Netherlands, Portugal, Spain, and Romania. In France, a 2018 government report estimated that half of women who had the cut were not told before the surgery. In Italy, one study estimated 61% of women did not give their consent for the procedure. It is not known how often the Christeller maneuver is used. Doctors often fail to report its use in medical records. But healthcare workers in at least 7 European countries told the Associated Press they see it used weekly or even daily. And a French government report last year estimated it was used in about 22% of births. The evidence says it's not helpful, it's actually harmful, said the WHO's Tunchalp. The fact that so many women are getting an intervention that both national and international guidance recommend against is very worrying. The Christeller maneuver is banned in Britain, said Patrick O'Brien. He is a doctor with Britain's Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. In the United States, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists said they had no guidance on the method because it is not suggested.
Many Americans experience surprise or disappointment when they wake up on Christmas Day. They might be surprised or disappointed by a family member's actions. They might be happy or unhappy about a Christmas gift. Imagine a child expects to get an Xbox or PlayStation for Christmas. On Christmas morning, they quickly open their gift. Inside is an English grammar book. They might feel disappointed. The Everyday Grammar team would prefer the new English grammar book. But if you are like most young people, you would probably rather have a new video game system. Today, we are going to explore those feelings of surprise and disappointment. In other words, we are going to explore how speakers show that reality was better or worse than their expectations.
Many languages use words to express expectation. Speakers also use words to express how events are not happening as expected. This idea is known as counter-expectation. Do not worry about the term. Just remember that it means that speakers use words to show that reality is going against or countering their expectations. English has many words that serve this purpose. Three of the most common are the words even, still, and actually. You will often hear them in casual, everyday speech. Speakers use these words to show surprise or disappointment. The pitch of their voice tells you what they mean. Let's study examples of each word.
Speakers often use the word even to show disappointment or surprise. Imagine a young child that expects a phone call from a family member, perhaps an uncle or grandparent. The phone call never comes. The child might say the following:
"What's wrong with him? He didn't even call me on Christmas Day."
Here, the child is expressing disappointment. She could have expressed the same idea in a much longer statement, such as, "I was expecting him to call on Christmas Day, but I didn't hear from him. Why didn't he give me a call?" Even highlights the child's disappointment because it emphasizes that the family member did not try to call. Even does not always have a sad meaning. It can have a happy meaning, too. Imagine a man named Ted. Ted is a forgetful man. He forgets to send letters or gifts to his parents. Ted's parents might have the following talk after they get a Christmas letter from him.
"Did you see Ted's letter?"
"Yeah, he even sent us a gift."
Here, the word "even" shows a pleasant surprise. Ted's mother did not expect a gift from him. By saying, "He even sent us a gift," she is suggesting that Ted has gone beyond her expectations.
Americans sometimes use "still" for showing how reality does not quite meet their expectations. Consider this example from the 1986 film Ferris Bueller's Day Off. At the end of the film, Ferris says the following lines. A different speaker might say similar lines after a lengthy, tiring, and disagreeable family Christmas party.
"You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go."
In the film, you can see the surprised look on Ferris's face. When he says, "You're still here?" you can tell he did not expect people to still be around. He is a little disappointed. Now, imagine a different situation. A family is having a Christmas dinner. They are looking for one family member, Uncle Bob. They wonder if he left without saying goodbye.
"Have you seen Uncle Bob?"
"No, did he leave? Wait, there he is. He's still here."
The way the final speaker says "still" shows that she is surprised to learn he was still at the dinner. She expected otherwise. A third common word that shows surprise or disappointment is "actually." "Actually" suggests something is true, even when it differs from what might have been thought or expected. Remember Uncle Bob? Bob has always been a nice guy. Imagine Uncle Bob sees a Christmas present he likes and then runs away with it. A speaker might say,
"I can't believe it. Uncle Bob actually stole her Christmas gift."
Here, the speaker uses "actually" to emphasize the unexpectedness of a happening. Uncle Bob stealing the present. She does not sound very happy. Speakers can use "actually" to show positive feelings, too. Think back to our character Ted, the guy who always forgets to give gifts for Christmas. His parents could have shown their surprise at receiving a gift from Ted by saying the following:
"Ted actually gave us a gift."
Here, the word "actually" shows that they are pleasantly surprised at this strange happening. Ted remembered Christmas.
The next time you are listening to an English speaker, try to find examples of words that show counter expectation. Is the speaker expressing surprise or disappointment? How does the speaker change the pitch of their voice? By answering these questions, you will start to learn how English speakers communicate emotions in subtle ways.
Excuse me, John, are you still recording your show?
Yes.
You're still recording? We have to go to the Christmas party.
Oh, no. I had actually forgotten about that. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. America's 18th president, Ulysses Grant, was elected to his second term in 1872. Grant had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South during the Civil War. He easily won the presidency in 1868 in the first election held after the war. Now, he would spend four more years as President of the United States. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about Grant's second term in office.
Grant's first administration was marked by dishonesty and shameful events. The situation grew much worse after he won a second term. Grant himself was not involved directly, but his administration suffered because of his ties to those who were involved. Soon after Grant's re-election, for example, there was a serious incident that involved many of his supporters in Congress. The Union Pacific Railroad Company had helped build a railroad across the American West to California. The cost of building the railroad was very high. The company got large amounts of aid from the government. Not all this aid came honestly. An investigation showed that leading members of Congress and even the vice president received shares of ownership in the company for free or at low cost. In exchange, they voted to use federal money to help build the railroad.
A few months later, members of Congress voted a pay raise for themselves and the executive branch of government. The pay raise would be retroactive. This meant the extra money would be paid for the 2 years already passed. Newspapers and citizens raised a storm of protest. Some lawmakers were afraid they would not be reelected, so they refused to accept the pay raise. Within 6 months, another shameful incident was uncovered. This one involved Jay Cook, one of the richest bankers in the country. He also was a good friend of President Grant. In 1869, Cook began raising money to build another railroad across America's West. He planned to sell $100 million worth of railroad bonds. Many people invested all the money they had in Cook's railroad, but Cook was unable to sell as many bonds as he expected. Soon, his banks had no money left. They could return no money to the thousands of people who had bought railroad bonds.
People hurried to other banks to withdraw their savings. Within hours, many of these other banks had to close. They, too, were out of money. Within a month, more than 5,000 banks across the country failed and closed their doors. This created an economic crisis. The New York Stock Exchange closed for 10 days. Factories closed. Thousands of people lost their jobs. Investigations showed that many of the banks that failed had violated banking laws. The laws often were not enforced because so many bankers had given money to the ruling Republican Party.
Other incidents followed. One of the biggest was called the Whiskey Ring. It involved a group of whiskey producers and some high officials who were friends of President Grant. Together, they found a way not to pay taxes on their whiskey. One of Grant's close advisors was at the center of the incident. A grand jury found him not guilty of any crime. However, it charged several hundred whiskey producers and government officials with illegal activities. President Grant had done nothing illegal, but the Whiskey Ring incident increased public feeling that there was no honesty in the White House. The feeling grew that Grant was a failure.
These incidents took place during a time of intense social and political change in the United States. The period after the Civil War was a time of industrial revolution and business growth. Most of this growth was taking place in the North. Before the Civil War, most businesses were small. Now, there were many companies with large numbers of workers. The companies also had large numbers of owners. They sold shares of ownership to anyone with enough money to buy.
A few men rose to positions of great power in business. In the steel industry, for example, there was Andrew Carnegie. He came to the United States as a boy from Scotland. He took a low-paying job in a factory that produced cotton cloth. He worked hard. In time, he earned enough money to take control of an iron factory. Carnegie soon built another factory. This one produced steel with a new technology. The system worked well. Soon, he was earning more than $1 million a year. He competed fiercely with other steel companies. He pressured railroads to transport his steel for lower prices than his competitors. And he cut his prices to force other steel makers out of the business. Before long, Andrew Carnegie was the unquestioned leader of America's steel industry. His position gave him great power over the economy of the whole country.
What Carnegie did for the steel industry, John D. Rockefeller did for the oil industry. Oil became a useful product only in the middle of the 1800s. Rockefeller was part of a group of businessmen who built an oil processing center in Ohio. It was so successful that Rockefeller gave up his other business interests. He put all his money into oil production. He formed the Standard Oil Company of Ohio. John D. Rockefeller's new company used the same aggressive business methods as Andrew Carnegie, Rockefeller bought control of other oil processing companies. He started price wars that forced his competitors out of business. Most important, Rockefeller made a secret deal with the railroads. The deal greatly reduced his transportation costs. This permitted him to crush his competition. Before long, he controlled 95% of the oil processing industry in the United States.
As with steel and oil, America's railroads were an extremely important business in the 1800s. In fact, they were the nation's biggest business. They were as important as automobiles and airplanes are to the American economy today. Before the Civil War, most railroads were east of the Mississippi River. Most were small lines. In the years after the war, four major railroads got control of almost all the lines in the east, and they began building new lines in the west.
The first rail line to cross the nation was completed in 1869. It was built by two companies. One company started from the east and went west. The other went in the opposite direction. Finally, after 6 years of back-breaking labor, the two work teams met in northern Utah. They connected the rail lines with a golden spike. It was a great moment in the nation's history. Now, at last, the two coasts of the United States were united by a single line of metal rail. It was like the day 100 years later when the first American walked on the moon.
Like the steel and oil industries, the railroad industry also had its stories of intense business competition. In this case, the most influential man was Cornelius Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt already was rich from the shipping industry. Now, he formed the New York Central Railroad. It was the largest railroad in the East. Cornelius Vanderbilt tried to take over the railroad industry. He was not as successful as Andrew Carnegie with steel or John D. Rockefeller with oil. A group of other rich railroad owners blocked his plans. But Vanderbilt did succeed in winning a great amount of power and influence.
Vanderbilt and the other new leaders of industry were powerful, and they let others know it. They sometimes made statements about how they did not have to obey the law. Other powerful men thought the same way. Some were officials elected or appointed to serve in the federal government. Political power blinded them to their responsibility to be honest and fair to the public. As a result, the Republican Party lost public support. The blame was placed on Ulysses Grant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.